everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's time for It's All About Food. Thanks for joining me today. I just want to jump right in and get started because we have a very important guest and a great topic that we're going to be covering today. My guest is Peter Laufer, winner of major awards for excellence in reporting. He's an independent journalist, broadcaster, and documentary filmmaker working in traditional and new media. He's the James Wallace Chair in Journalism at the University of Oregon School of Journalism and Communication, and he's written many, many wonderful books. Thanks for joining me on It's All About Food.
Oh, it's terrific to be here with you. Thanks for the opportunity.
I know that you're very busy, and you're busy doing some incredible work. Maybe we'll hear more about what you're up to right now. But I want to talk about your book, Truth Behind Food Labeling. And when I went to look at the book and to get you on the show to talk about it, I really didn't know too much about what it was about. And I finished reading it, and I was very moved, excited, scared, lots of different emotions, but I'm glad somebody's talking about it.
Well, it seems like it is necessary to talk about what the veracity is regarding the label that we see more and more, organic, on food, and that's why I felt compelled to look into it and to write the book, Organic. It's an amazing change in the last generation or so, where the amount of money that we spend in just America on groceries marked organic has skyrocketed from about $2 billion a year to this year, $30 billion. That's already a couple of more billion since the book was published last year. So wherever there's that kind of growth, the potential exists for sloppiness and worse. And that's what I found researching the book.
Now, this increase in this market, I think it reflects a lot of different things, but I know from my point of view, I want to buy organic because I like to think I'm educated. I have a background in chemical engineering. I know what toxic pesticides and herbicides are doing to our soil, to our water, to our food, to all life on Earth. And I don't want to consume those residues. I don't want them poisoning the planet. And I want to go for food the way it was intended.
Yeah, well, I think that you and I will find nothing to argue about there. I agree with those sentiments, and I think so many people do who bother to think twice about what it is they're eating. The motivation behind the book was not to question the validity or value of choosing to eat in the manner you describe, but rather to get a sense of the labeling. When we pick that box off the shelf in the supermarket because it says organic on it, because we are thinking, as you are, what does that mean? Are we getting what we expect we're getting because it says organic?
Well, most of us today, since we don't grow our own food and we don't live near someone who is growing the food so that we can see how it's done, most of us, when we get food, either when we buy it in the supermarket or we eat it in a restaurant, it's a leap of faith, really, to believe that it's good for us.
But it's really more than that, or should be, for those of us who are lucky enough to live in a country like this one where we are operating via rules. And so there is the leap of faith. And as you say, a lot of us, most of us, can't not only grow our own foodstuffs in adequate supply to take care of ourselves. We might live in a climate where it's not possible to do that year round. But in addition to that, we're engaged in other activities. And so when we decide to buy something and it has a certain label on it, we should have an expectation and a confidence that it is what it says it is.
Yeah, we should. We like to think we're civilized, but a lot of things can go wrong, as you show in your book. So your book starts out as a journey to find out about two particular products you've purchased. One is a bag of rancid walnuts, and another is a can of beans that are labeled organic, you wonder how they got to your shelves, if they're really from where they say they're from, and you end up traveling the world to learn more about organic certification and where those foods and other foods come from.
Yeah, well, because we are this nation of laws, then we have regulations. And if a product says USDA organic on it, that's supposed to mean that it meets certain standards that the government sets that we all endorse because the government is us, and that we should have a sense of confidence in that. When I looked at the labels on those two products you cite that I deal with in the book, they indicated that the beans came from Bolivia and the nuts came from Kazakhstan. Well, those are two of the most corrupt places on Earth. There's nothing to say about it other than that regarding both government and business. So it immediately made me skeptical, and I thought that would be a good way to enter into this world and get a sense of how much we can trust the labels.
So just from a story point of view, you travel to Austria, to Italy, to Costa Rica, to Tunisia, to Bolivia, and there are wonderful stories and the individuals that you connect with. We love stories about food and reading about good food and eating good food, but there's a lot more to it, learning about the different countries' processes for certifying and verifying organic. And everywhere you went, it seemed there were a lot of holes.
Well, especially right here at home. And the concern that I have after doing the research and after being able to enjoy the adventures is very basic. As your listeners or many of them may know, when you look at the label of something that's labeled organic, there is a citation of the third-party certifier that is supposed to give you the confidence, because they've handled the inspections, that the product is, in fact, organic. Well, the initial worry that we all should have, I believe, is the way the system is set up. These third-party certifiers, for the most part, are for-profit companies, and they are in competition with each other, seeking contracts with the companies they're certifying. And then here is where the conflicts of interest really, or the potential for them, really need to be spotlighted. These companies are paid for that service by the very places that they're certifying. So the opportunity for some wink, wink, nod, nod, some outright graft for sloppiness is real.
I know what some of the reactions are when people hear this. One is, why should I bother buying organic if I can't be certain it is organic? Another reaction is for those farms that may or may not be certified organic, that are organic, why should or shouldn't they be certified if the process is so wrought with problems?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure how wrought it is with problems as much as with potential problems. And that's where the citation of the $2 billion to $30 billion is worth noting. When something is growing that fast, then the opportunity to perhaps not go by the book or just to mess up increases. It has to. And when the environment changes, when your local down at the corner mom and pop leftover from the late 60s organic natural food grocery store gets replaced by Costco and Walmart, and Costco and Walmart are the two biggest retailers of organic in America today, mm-hmm. No matter what you may think about Whole Foods. When that starts to happen in an environment where, to be gracious, sloppiness, and to be cynical, graft is likely, then there is cause for concern.
Yeah, and I'm wondering what to do about it. But let's jump to some of the countries you visited, because I really love some of the stories that came out of it. And one of them really had me rolling when I read about you being in Tunisia and you visited an olive farmer who invited you to dinner. I'm a vegan, and many of my listeners are very plant-based, and you explained that you didn't eat meat, and it was like right out of the Greek wedding movie with Andrea Martin when she says, "What, you don't eat meat? That's okay, I'll make lamb."
Yeah, it was really great fun. He said, I said, "I don't eat meat," and he said, "We will eat couscous with no meat." And I said to him, "That sounds great. I love couscous." And he said, "We will eat couscous with no meat. We will eat couscous with sheep."
That really does happen.
It really did happen. But he was a very gracious host. And when I suggested that sheep are, in fact, meat, he had his chef cook up just a gorgeous bounty with the most lovely vegetables imaginable. It was terrific to be in a third world environment, because I am showcasing problems in Kazakhstan and Bolivia, two third world countries. I know for some people that designation is politically incorrect, but it really is a third world. I would hazard a guess that a lot of people that don't want to hear the word third world haven't been in the third world, or if I may, as the writer Paul Thoreau calls it, the turd world. But I wanted to make sure that I do everything I could to make this as balanced a proposition as possible. And that's why I was so pleased to go to Tunisia and see this spectacular farm where the most gorgeous produce was grown and this exquisite olive oil was created by this fellow who really is a poet of food, just a wonderful man.
I was in Tunisia once, and the thing that struck me the most is where I was very poor, and I was struck by the low quality of all of the buildings that people were living in. But there were clementine trees everywhere, ripe with this luscious fruit, and I kept thinking, this place is so rich, and they don't even realize what wealth they have.
Yeah, I'm not sure they don't realize it, but one thing made me realize being there and also living in Oregon and California is that those of us in these climates are lucky enough to be able to pick and choose and have the opportunity to, if not know the growers, at least have confidence often in the retailers knowing the growers. But if you're in the northern tier of this country, if you're up in Duluth or Bemidji or the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, where it seems like it's winter every month except mm-hmm. July, the environment is different. And that's when the trust really is needed. And if the produce is being flown in from Chile and Mexico, aside from whatever concerns you may have about the appropriateness of using natural resources so that you can whimsically eat raspberries in the middle of winter, but when it's coming in from a distance like that, then the importance of the validity of the label really becomes consequential, because if you can't trust the label, then it's meaningless.
Now, you talked about a number of large organizations, Trader Joe's for one, and then some government organizations, the USDA, and they're all so large that things very easily get lost. And there's, I think many people, maybe they're not incompetent, but they just don't want to go the lengths to really get information that people want, and you were asking them all.
It's more insidious than that, if I may interrupt. Excuse
yes, please.
Me. As I try to make clear in the book, with Trader Joe's, there is this bizarre dichotomy. You go into the place, and the rock and roll music is on the box there, and you're dancing around the aisles, and they have all of this great stuff, like the popcorn made with olive oil and the bargain wines. But that seeming openness and embracement of the consumer is a charade. It is one of the most closed companies in terms of offering information about where it sources its products, as is imaginable. Trader Joe's is not only not transparent, it's not translucent, it's opaque. You cannot see beyond that 1960s rock and roll music and the guys and gals in their flowery Hawaiian shirts. And as I make clear in the book, the company is owned wholly by Aldi, which is a Germany-based discount supermarket chain along the lines of Costco. And the holding company also is completely closed door. So if you want to know more than just the glib copy that's up on the blackboards there at Trader Joe's or on their labels about where the products came from, the door will be slammed in your face just as it was in mine.
Do you think they always were this evil? Or did they get so large and powerful that it just corrupted them like power usually does?
Yeah, I'm not sure evil is the right word, but certainly closed. And yes, it is their corporate culture and has been from the beginning. The company is built on proprietary secrets and not informing the public. And in the case of the walnuts, misinforming the public.
Well, it can be downright dangerous. I know personally because I have a relative who has celiac disease, and when her mom repeatedly asked Trader Joe's about where products came from, the door was definitely closed, so she can't buy food there.
Well, and there's no reason, I would hope, that one would want to buy anything from a place that isn't telling you where they got it, whether it's the hardware store or the food store, but particularly when it's the food store, and this is what you're eating for your health and happiness, then it's absurd for us to be told that it's none of our business where stuff came from.
So what should we be doing with regards to Trader Joe's? Should we not be buying there? Or should we be writing them a lot of letters or both?
I don't think Trader Joe's could care less how many letters you or I or all your listeners combined write to them. They're a phenomenally successful company. This is their business plan, and I can't imagine that they're going to change it. What to do about shopping there? Who knows? The stuff is a bargain. Mm-hmm. There's some really tasty stuff there. It's actually kind of fun to go into the store, usually when it's not too crowded. And probably most of the stuff is what it says it is. But I sure have a hard time shopping there since I did this investigation.
Right. Well, before your book, I started to have some tainted feelings about things that were going on now, and now they're even more tainted.
Sorry.
But fortunately, I have choices. Not everyone has choices, but a lot of us do. And I personally want to support companies that I believe in. I believe in their mission. I believe in the quality of their product. And we need truth behind labeling to find out who those companies are.
Yeah, and some of us are, as you say, lucky enough to be in a position to make these kinds of choices. There's a Trader Joe's about 2 miles from where I'm sitting right now in Marin County in California talking to you. Two blocks away, there's a locally owned food emporium that is just magnificent, the size of a typical kind of Whole Foods place, but completely locally owned. And every piece of produce in there is labeled with the name of the farm and the mileage from the store to the farm. And if something if there's some question about the origin of the food, for example, they sell meat there, and so the beef will be labeled grass-fed only if it's in pasture land where there are no weeds. And so they're extraordinarily precise, and it doesn't hurt their business at all. This place is open from 8 in the morning until 8 at night or something like that, and it is jammed day and night. It's a phenomenal success, and I think that's an indicator of how people like you and your listeners will respond with their pocketbooks if you're getting what you want. It's a little pricier over there, but most of us go there to support it and because it is giving us what we seek.
Well, in today's world, we definitely have the technology that can trace every food and every ingredient that's in a box. You mentioned in your book that in Austria there are some companies that have food that you can trace back to where they came from. And I'm thinking about the courier companies. We can trace packages where they came from, where they stopped along the way. We just need some slick coders, and we could know where everything came from, which we do to some extent, like at that one store you mentioned. And I remember when mad cow disease came out, there was more focus on determining where meat came from. With so much foodborne illness going on today, it could be beneficial to have that traceability. And that's something that we should have on all food at this point.
Yeah, except in the environment that we have here, the type of capitalism we practice, the regulatory agency in question, which is the USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, National Organic Program, the NOP, is serving business at least as much as it's serving the rest of us, and maybe more. And it is the position of the USDA that if companies like Trader Joe's or others decide that the origin of their products is a proprietary business tool, then they are successfully able to hide behind that claim and not tell you where something you're going to buy and eat came from.
Yeah, and we see that especially with animal agriculture. They may not use the word proprietary, but things are secret, and the companies that are raising animals in confinement don't want you to see what they're doing inside. Lots of secrets, too many.
Too many secrets, exactly. And it seems that this, if there is some activism to be engaged in, this is a place to focus energy, and that is to foment a movement toward transparency, so that something as simple and straightforward as knowing for sure where what you're eating came from and under what conditions it was grown or otherwise developed and processed, that seems as if it should be a basic right in a society such as ours, and that the business interests of the companies involved regarding the origin should be secondary to our interests as consumers, knowing what it is we are eating and where it came from.
Now, you're interested in organic food. I'm interested in organic food. It's a small portion of the food market. I'm imagining that I hate using the word conventional food because it's not conventional, but the industrial food that isn't organic, I'm imagining that it's worse when it comes to transparency.
Yeah, I think that you're probably correct, because as the proponents of the National Organic Program like to remind me, the reality is that there is a lot of regulation at work, and if you trust the players along the way, then there is more attention to how the organic products are brought to market than the so-called conventional products. That is true, but even that is a bit twisted. Isn't it strange how it is that we certify supposedly and mark organic food, but if you're spraying it with something that maybe you don't want to eat, there's no skull and crossbones on the box of so-called conventional food?
Yeah, that's the craziest thing out there. But I guess it comes from when the whole pesticide, herbicide movement began after World War II, we really believed in better living with chemistry. And we believed...
Some of us, yeah.
Some
right.
of us, yeah. I went to work for DuPont, my first job out of college. I believed.
Well, that's quite the turnaround that you've made.
Yes, I don't believe anymore. I mean, chemicals are important. We're made of chemicals, but there are good chemicals and there are bad chemicals. And when we use them to destroy the life around the stuff we're growing, we're destroying a lot more than what we intend to. That's the damage with pesticides and herbicides today. Another thing that scared me in your book, when there are different shades of organic.
Well, there certainly are different definitions, and there are there are compounds that are permissible under the National Organic Program policies and that are not so-called organic and can be in something with the USDA organic label on it. And the decisions about that are made with heavy influence from industry.
And I don't remember in the book if this happened in the United States or not, but I imagine it can, that there are some distributors that are aware of the 95% rule and will knowingly add a little bit of conventional product in with the organic to make more money.
Well, they're knowingly, probably, but more than that, it, again, the potential is for sloppiness. If the company is 50% conventional, 50% organic, or more likely 90% conventional, 10% organic, just trying to take advantage of some of the opportunity out there to make some more money. How carefully are they segregating the two market segments? And who's watching over that? And if they're being inspected a couple of times a year, often superficially, is that noticed if that separation isn't complete? These are the kinds of problems that exist potentially if you think that it's important to have organic as your diet.
Well, I do.
Yes.
And some people will say that you're concerned, you're privileged in being concerned about organic food when there are so many people who don't have enough food, who live in food deserts or can't afford organic food. And my personal feeling is my first priority in where my dollars go. I don't make a lot of money. I live on a very modest income, but I believe in buying quality food. Organic food. I want to support those businesses so that they can grow and provide more for other people and make it more affordable.
Yeah, and we are so extraordinarily privileged, even those of us who are not wealthy. And that's one of the problems also is the markups are perhaps unnecessary and certainly heinous in many respects, where some of this stuff costs twice as much because it has the organic label on it and you're being told that you can't find out where it came from.
All right. So just after you've learned all you've learned all over the world about what's going on with organic food and labeling, what did you learn and what can you recommend we do?
I think it's basic. And part of it is based on privilege. If we're lucky enough to live in a place, as I am here in California, relatively adjacent to the producers and have an opportunity year-round to have food that is grown locally, adjust my diet a little bit so I don't find myself compelled to be eating blueberries in February, and shop at stores where I feel a comfort that efforts have been made to secure the veracity of the products as they're labeled, then those are the kinds of steps we can take. Who are our retailers? Are we confident in our retailers that they are doing their due diligence? When possible, do we know the producers? When it's the right time of year, can we get to a farmer's market where we can meet with the farmer and have a sense of community and enjoy that process, but also feel confident that she or he is doing that which should be done so that the food is what they say it is. But unfortunately, for the vast majority of the population, those things are not possible based on the time that they have for shopping, based on where they live, based on their climate. And that's why we have regulatory agencies, and that's why we should be able to trust what the label says.
Yeah, should. There are so many regulations that are out there that are not being upheld. And those that break it aren't being punished appropriately, not just with organic foods, but so many regulations we have. And part of it is because the organizations don't have the funding to carry out what they're supposed to. You said that for the certification of organic food, there's something like one inspector for a billion dollars of product, something like that?
Yeah, although in the last Farm Bill, which was passed since the book went to press, a relative bunch more money has been allocated to the National Organic Program. Now, a lot of that is for marketing purposes because the USDA in the National Organic Program is basically in the business of promoting organic food, but nonetheless, there will be some more money. But yes, it's extraordinarily underfunded. It perhaps isn't as bad as it was in the Upton Sinclair days of the jungle, but it's pretty bad.
Well, you were concerned about the conflict of interest going on with the certifiers certifying farms for organic food. The USDA is a conflict of interest within itself.
Well, one could argue that because it's the USDA both engaged in marketing and in inspection, and it's also the USDA that's certifying these inspectors, these certification companies, to be able to certify.
Now, you ended the book talking about the rancid walnuts from
Kazakhstan.
And had you heard more since you finished the book from
yes,
the USDA?
Yes, I received from the USDA a heavily redacted report on the correspondence that they had that determined how they ascertained that, in fact, those nuts were not organic. I have appealed by a Freedom of Information Act request the redacted report to get more information. But again, unfortunately, that report is an example of how the USDA in the National Organic Program response to my requests has been serving industry, not you and your listeners going to the market.
Yeah, I mean, that piece alone is chilling. And all of the questions you asked them at the end of your book, I think were pretty standard questions any customer would ask a vendor who was providing them a product that wasn't up to specification.
Yeah, where did this stuff come from, and how did you find out that it wasn't what you said it was?
And what are you going to do to prevent it in the future? I mean, these are classic standard industry type of customer service vendor relation questions.
And your government says to you, none of your business. It's their business.
None of your business. Whew. Okay, well, I look forward to an update on what happens with that report, what you get and what comes out of it. What are you working on now?
Well, I'm working on the paperback edition, and in fact, that will be in the paperback edition of the book Organic, where I will have an afterword that will go through this process that I'm in right now with the USDA, trying to get them to explain those questions that you just noted.
You have is it a blog or an article called Slow News?
Yeah, it's a book that I wrote, another book that I wrote that deals with maybe slowing down a tad regarding the 24-hour news cycle so that we can, as is the case here with the organic question, get a little more information and have time to, so to speak, digest it.
Yeah, that's why I brought it up, because this is such an important topic. It's not something that we talk about in a soundbite and then move on. So a lot of information we need to learn, we need to digest, like you said. I liked the parallel you made where we get empty news, just like we're consuming empty calories. Everything's just a quick fix, and we're paying a terrible price for it.
We are, but we can turn this around, and that's
Yay.
The good news, and that's why what the work that you do is so valuable.
Okay, last question, and that is, do you have some favorite delicious organic plant foods that you love?
A lot of them, I guess. This place down the street that I told you about, the Food Emporium, makes a wonderful something for breakfast, which is a burrito with tofu and fresh vegetables in it, and I'm a sucker for it, despite the fact that it costs $6.98 painful cents. And as I said earlier, I'm conflicted because of this of so-called organic popcorn at Trader Joe's made with olive oil. That it's very hard to just buy one bag, and then it's very hard not to eat the whole bag.
You have to make your
sure.
own. You get some wonderful olive oil from your friend in Tunisia,
That's right, and make the popcorn myself from popcorn that I buy from a farmer down the street.
Absolutely, it'll be even more addicting. You could package it and sell it, and maybe, who knows, this could be an incredible product for you.
There you go. Well, it's just been grand having the opportunity to talk about this with such a sympathetic audience and questioner, and it's terrific that you continue to share with your audience.
Thank you. Well, I love the book, and I know my listeners are passionate about this topic too, and we all want to make a difference, make this world a better place, and we need brave people like you going all around the world to find the truth. So thank you for that.
A pleasure. Thank you, and I look forward to being in touch.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.